Welcome to Worlds Apart. Sound mind and good instincts have always been must-have qualities for those seeking and wielding power. But the definition of good or even effective politics is much harder to formulate. With Russia and the West now trading accusations of irrationality and even madness over their stances in Ukraine, is there still any common ground to be reached? Well, to discuss that, I'm now joined by Henry Sardarian, Dean of the School of Governance and Politics at the Moscow State Institute of International Relations. Mr. Sardarian, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your invitation.
Now, the launch of the Russian military operation in Ukraine came as a surprise, not only to many in the West, but I also think to many in Russia, including myself. It is true that Ukraine over the last couple of years was increasingly being militarized. It is true that it presented an objective security challenge for Russia. But did you personally believe that this issue, this problem will be addressed in such a way?
I mean, sooner or later, it should have been done in this way, because Russia, during not only these 8 years, but even before, Russia has always signalized the threats and the problems which Russia faces in its relations with the Western countries, with NATO, with each of the NATO member states alone, because the threats to the Russian security were never taken into account. And moreover, I guess the main target and the main goal of the NATO during the last years was to pose a threat to Russia. So Russia has proposed several times a resolution to this problem in a way Russia sees it. But unfortunately, we have heard that it's not going to happen, and we've heard only the language of ultimatums. So I think it was predictable that sooner or later it's going to happen like this.
I asked this question of many of my guests, and I want to run it by you as well. Do you think this boldness, this brazenness with which Ukraine was militarized recently, as well as with which Ukraine openly pursued anti-Russian policies and politics, do you think it was, in fact, based on the calculation that no matter what, Russia may grumble as much as it wants, but it would never ever use military force against Ukraine for a whole host of strategic, cultural, emotional, psychological, as well as kinship reasons?
No, I guess it was done keeping in mind that Ukraine is going to be the one to start aggression, another one against the Donbas, people who live in Donbas region, and then maybe against Russia as well. So the target was that we should militarize Ukraine, and the target number one would be to bring Russia into this conflict and make this conflict as long as possible. And you can see this by looking at the types of the weapons which are provided to Ukraine. They are their attitude towards Ukrainians is something which reminds me of the way they work with the Taliban movement or with any other. They just supply them with weapons which are necessary for partisan war, for a very long and very very demolishing for any country and its economy and its population war. And they have no other target there. Mm-hmm. They use Ukraine as a territory which should be a kind of infinite threat to Russia's security.
One of your colleagues, Andrei Shushentsov, said before the start of this operation that the key problem of Russia's foreign policy was, as he put it, the low feasibility of threats. In other words, that Russia was drawing its red lines, it was signaling its discomfort with NATO's policies, but essentially, decision makers in the West didn't believe that Russia would do anything kinetic in response to that. Do you agree with that? And if so, whose fault was that? Moscow's or the West, that the Kremlin's repeated warnings not taken seriously?
First of all, the Western countries got used to the fact that Russia is the country which has lost in the Cold War. And that was the main attitude towards Russia for this 20, 30 years. However, the world has changed in these 30 years, and the Russian government has stressed for many times that there are some territories which present strategic importance for Russian Federation, and it's not going to be possible to work with those countries to make them become parts of some international unions or political or economic or military without taking into account the position of Russian Federation. Maybe up to this moment, they thought that we are going to stress the importance of some points, but we are not going to act in the most decisive way. However, I think now no one has any doubts that Russia is very serious when it comes to the red lines for its security.
Mm-hmm. But to some extent, Mr. Shardarian, this perception has turned into its exact opposite, because when you look at how this conflict is covered in Western media, Russia is intentionally being turned into a pariah, and Putin is presented as a murderous psychopath. This tendency to apply a psychopathological framework for what is essentially a foreign policy analysis, do you think that's a manipulation, or is the West indeed fully ignorant of structural precursors to this crisis?
If we talk about the political elite of the Western countries, they are fully aware of all the problems which we have for the moment. But the things you have mentioned, I guess they are mainly used for the inner politics and for a kind of a pressure for the civil society of the countries which are now targeting Russian economy and which are also developing some aggressive measures against the Russian Federation. Because you should be able to explain your population why they are going to suffer in the coming winter, why everything is going to be twice or even triple more expensive than it used to be several months ago. You should make them believe that this is the price they pay for fighting something terrible and something very dangerous for themselves as well. So that's why they are trying to present Russia in this way, because what the United States do at this moment is they keep destroying the perspectives and the future of the European economy, because for the United States, their relations with Russia are much less important than for the European Union, because the difference is almost 10 times. Well, our trade balance with the United States is around $30 billion. With the European Union, it's more than $230 billion. So a huge difference here. And that's why it's very difficult to explain to any German or Italian or any French or, I don't know, Dutch citizen of the European Union, why are you going to live in a terrible way in the coming months? Why are you going to pay much more for very regular products, which you are very used to, in case you tell them the truth? Because the truth is that 8 years ago, the Ukrainian government has started a war against Donbas, and now Russian Federation tries to end it with this special operation. In this case, it is not possible to explain all these things to your citizens. But if you present Russia as a terrible country and its president as someone who does terrible things, etc., then it gets much easier.
Now, let me ask you about the reality check that will also have to happen on the Russian side. Given the sheer scale of the challenges that Russia took upon itself, and I don't only mean the military operation and the Western sanctions it provoked, but also I think our country bears national responsibility for rebuilding the infrastructure and, you know, creating at least a modicum of governance in the Ukrainian territories now under Russia's control. Do you find all that burden that Russia took upon itself realistic? Do you think it can bear it? And how long do you think it will take? And how much do you think it will take away from Russia's own development?
Okay, well, I think to answer this question, I really have to answer another one as well. I've told for many times in different interviews that the special operation might be in Ukraine. However, the war is against the West in general and against the world order which we have for this moment. And when the special operation ends, we are going to change not only the future of Ukraine, but also the way the international relations are composed and the way the international financial system is composed and the way actually the countries dealt with Russia in these 30 years. This is important because I'm absolutely sure that Russia is capable, and it, not only that Russia is capable, but that Russia is going to bring the special operation to a successful end. And afterwards, I'm sure that Russia is going to get all the points which were of strategic importance for Russian Federation before the special operation, and all the requirements and demands which Russia has presented to the Ukrainian government, they are all going to be met, but that's not going to be the end. I'm sure that afterwards the world has to change and we are going to live in a completely different world, because just to make you sure that that's going to happen. Just imagine that during this 1 month, the Western countries and the so-called global world, etc., they have they've taken all the resources they've had, they've taken all the instruments and mechanisms they had, and they just threw it to destroy Russian economy. They are doing everything to destabilize Russian political system. They are doing everything, all the steps they are taking now are to make the Russian citizens protest and oppose its own government, which is not happening and not going to happen for sure, because Russian government is much more legitimate than the American government or any European government at the moment.
Mr. Sardarin, I have to stop you here because we need to take a very short break, but we will be back in just a few moments to talk about how the world is indeed going to change. Stay tuned. Worlds Apart with Henry Sardarin, Dean of the School of Governance and Politics at the Moscow State Institute of International Relations. Mr. Sardarin, before the break, we were talking about the shifting world order, and I know that for you, it is a much bigger issue than just Ukraine. You said once that historically, Russia has already twice helped to shape the architecture of global security, first after the Vienna Congress and then after the Yalta Conference. Are you saying that we are now witnessing a third attempt?
Yeah, that's surely going to happen like this. And I have no doubts about that, because as soon as the special operation ends and Russia gets all the points which were presented as it demands towards the Ukrainian government, it's going to be obvious that the resources of the United States, which is considered to be the main dictator in the
I can see how it can look like a dictatorship.
No, that is a dictatorship, because if the difference of dictatorship from other forms of governing is that dictatorship doesn't have any law which is going to limit its power. And we have seen that the United States during these 30 years have invaded the countries which they considered they could. They never paid attention to any international law obligations. So in these 30 years, they have behaved themselves in the international relations as a dictator. Now, when it becomes obvious that all of the resources they had are not enough to try to oppose Russia in its very justified demands, the world will have to change. And many countries are now looking at this process, and it should be said that when we succeed in this special operation, it's going to be much easier for Russia to talk with its friends and with its enemies, with its opponents and with its allies. It's going to be much easier. So many countries around the world now look and now they see what is this world which existed for these 30 years where the United States were the only center for taking decisions. What is this world politics system really capable of? And what it is capable of, it already uses all the resources against Russia. And when they are going to fail in their attempts to limit our influence in the territories which present strategic importance for Russia, then those countries are also going to have their own thoughts on the way they are going to behave in the coming years.
Now, I have to say before that, unlike the United States, Russia is not seeking global leadership or global hegemony, not only because it clearly lacks the resources to maintain it, but also because existentially, philosophically, a multipolar system based on a balance of interests suits Moscow better. Why is that?
Russia has never presented any sort of ideology or any sort of philosophical teaching, which idea would be to incorporate all the nations and all the people of the world into one system and one model of governance. For 70 years, Russia was a communist country, but even the communist ideology was not invented in Russia, it was invented in Europe. But during the 1,000 years of Russia's history, we see that Russia was never the country which intended to create a sort of universal teaching which would be obligatory for all the nations around Russia's territory, or any sort of universal model of governance, political system, political regime, etc. You can see that even those nations which were part of the Russian Empire, they always kept their old national identity. Russia was very thoughtful and very attentive towards their religion and their religious culture and heritage in general. This is the philosophical tradition of Russia. Whereas when we look at our counterparts, we see that wherever they come, they try to build their leftist liberal political philosophy, which they try to bring into political systems, mass media, universities, schools, all over the world, wherever they come. And the result of that is at best that those systems, they don't function. And first is when we have states which become failed states, this is the worst result possible.
Speaking about this respect that I agree with you, Russia historically has demonstrated to its neighbors or even people living within the larger Russia, I want to ask you about how it applies to Ukraine in this modern era, because you said that Russia still has a stake in maintaining Ukraine's statehood and Ukraine's sovereignty, provided, of course, that it signs to military neutrality. Why is that? Why would Russia be interested at in this day and age to have Ukraine as an independent state?
Well, Russia has never put as its target making any other state part of Russian Federation or annexation of any other state. We've had many cases when parts of other states, which were populated by different ethnical groups, they have declared their independence and their willingness to be part of Russia. That is the thing that happened. But if the parts of Ukraine, which are not Crimea, Lugansk, and Donetsk republics, they don't wish to be part of Russia, and they wish to be part of an independent state, or I don't know, maybe they would declare their own independence. I don't know what's going to happen in the coming months. Russia is surely not the country to occupy the territories of foreign states and to annexate any territory of other country. That never happened before, and Russia has declared for many times that our military operation doesn't have as its target occupying Ukraine. That's not going to happen.
You said once that the United States actually needs, desperately needs, is a model based on a constant, everlasting threat of mutual destruction. So even if the Americans don't have an enemy that wants to pick up the fight with them, they will have to either invent one or create some semblance of this apocalyptic strife. Why would that be beneficial to Washington?
First of all, the political elite of the United States always needs that in order to have the political programs and to act the way they usually do. I mean, during the 30 years, they always had someone who was willing to destroy the United States. It's not important if that was Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi or Bashar al-Assad. All of them have, I don't know why, but they were so dangerous for the American people that the United States had spent billions of dollars to act and to start military campaigns on the territory of those states, or to lose the lives of thousands of their own people, and also of the millions of lives of the citizens of the countries they have invaded before. So this is the first target. The second one, as you can see, as soon as there is Russia, for the United States, that's very easy to control the European countries. I mean, 1 year or 2 years ago, we were talking about NATO being almost dead. Now, each time Joseph Biden visits any European country or makes his speeches, he's saying that we are all together, NATO countries are together, we are consolidated, etc. That mainly happens because they try to picture Russia as a monster who wants to destroy all the countries of the European continent, and it becomes much easier to control them. Mainly, we can see that the most aggressive NATO member countries are the Baltic states and Poland. Those states are the ones who are pushing the most in the most aggressive way against Russia. And in order to make, Italy or any other European country, which was before this, was much less. It cared much less about those threats. Now it's a very easy way to pressure the public opinion and to change the public opinion in those countries and to consolidate them under the United States rule in a higher level.
You mentioned a couple of Western-led wars, and for a long time, those wars, the populations of those Western countries were isolated from the consequences of those wars, especially the Americans, who have the benefit of two oceans. But I think starting with the Arab uprisings, especially Libya and Syria, the Europeans started to feel the pain, first in the wave of migrants, and then responsibilities that they had to increasingly take for the African security. Nowadays, with this Russian crisis, as you mentioned, the Europeans are going to see it in their stores, in their pockets, at the gas stations, etc. Do you think they will still be held in this Stockholm syndrome mentality and being super obedient to the Americans? Or can it actually have an opposite effect when the push comes to shove, people, and when the hurt is palpable enough that people may actually change their way of thinking and realize that perhaps the world is not as they have been told it is?
I think sooner or later, the things are going to change. I'm not sure that the European Union is going to exist in a way, at least in a way it exists now. And I'm not sure that it's going to exist at all in the future. So when we are going to have the next elections, maybe we are not going to see fast results in the European countries. I mean, the ones which are going to take place in half of a year. In the countries where the leading political forces or the ruling forces were to lose maybe a month ago, maybe they are going to succeed now, because they were going to lose to the political parties and leaders which were not pro-Russian, but at least they were much more pro-Russian. Yeah, they were saying that we cannot exist without normal relations with Russia, we should have a dialogue, etc. Now, because of the history and because of the hysterical propaganda which the mass media in the European countries runs for at least a month, for those political parties it's going to be much more difficult now. But when we look at the perspective of 2, 3, and 4 years, I think that the European Union is going to suffer a lot because of what they do now. They are going to have problems with agriculture. They are going to have problems with gas, with oil. And as a result, maybe during the elections, citizens are not going to have a direct connection between what happened in the period of sanctions which their governments have imposed towards Russia and what they have on their shelves in the shops, but in any way they are going to vote against those governments, and I'm sure that's going to take place. But I think what's going to change a lot for Russia as well is that we shouldn't wait for the attitude from the European countries to change towards Russia, or we shouldn't have hopes that, you know, they are going to have another president and maybe there's going to be better. There's not going to be better. We should keep that in mind, and we should understand what our real national interests are, and we should work in a way that our national interests are always followed by the other states. If not, we have our red lines and our reaction is going to be like this.
Okay, well, on this point, Mr. Sardarian, we have to leave it here. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And thank you for watching. Hope to see you again next week on Worlds Apart.